Hey nerds, we understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome, everybody, to another edition of Slippery When Wet, Geek Cave Podcast Movies. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad. Clever intro here. Welcome to the movie segment of the Geek Cave Podcast. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you, yes, you, can look rad today. With free shipping on all orders within the U.S., plus great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic. Whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or something in between, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. We are also brought to you by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back. There's a postage paid envelope right there. And you can get a new one. Or you can keep forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices, and they've just updated their rewards program where you can stack up to $20 in coupons toward any purchase. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Speaking of which, you guys like the Geek Cave Podcast.
We do.
Do you like feeling like a big damn hero?
Yes.
Do you want a chance to win some fabulous prizes while feeling like a big damn hero?
Damn straight I do.
Of course you do. You're not monsters. Well, pull out your brown coats and head over to geekcavepodcast.com. Find a link on the page that'll put you in a position to donate. Feel like a what? That's right. Feel like a big damn hero.
Big damn hero.
And have the chance for a prize from like a t-shirt from Shirtosaurus, a physical copy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Shredder's Revenge on Switch from Limited Run Games. Heck, for a donation of $250 or more, you can join us three heroes, as we record a segment of the show.
Yeah.
How's that? Extra life, y'all. Extra life. Raising money for Children's Miracle Network. Donate, feel like a big damn hero, help out some kids.
I don't know what to say. I was taken completely off guard by that, and I loved every minute of it.
I love that, yes.
So that all being said, I spent most of my time this month coming up with that paragraph. I didn't get a chance to go anywhere or do anything, Justin. Did you find a party?
I did, in fact. Please welcome the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Pilot party! Pilot party!
Pilot party!
I'm sorry, what?
That was their experimental phase.
Welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode.
That's what happens if you slip them caffeine.
Why only the first episode? You see, my friends, it's all quite clear. There's just not enough time for the things that I hold dear. Reading weird comics is all very nice. But then it's off to Reddit to give exceptional advice. So here I sit, my lawn freshly mowed. Sadly, I realize there's only time for one episode.
You are a genius and a scholar among men. Carry on.
Our story begins, like so many others, in a courtroom. Trevor is found guilty on all 14 counts of dangerous driving, destruction of priceless artwork, criminal damage, and arson. He sincerely apologizes for his actions and says, "There was this bee." Yes, this month I'm talking about Man vs. Bee on Netflix, starring Rowan Atkinson. Flashback to the beginning. Nina and Christian are preparing to go on a vacation and waiting for Orlando to arrive to house sit. Christian says Orlando can't come and the agency is sending someone else. Enter Trevor, Rowan Atkinson, a brand new employee of House Sitters Deluxe. Nina and Christian are trying to rush out the door, so quickly give the do's and don'ts for their dog, Cupcake, and how the house works. Also, everything is in the manual. Remember that. It's in the manual. They leave, and Trevor begins what is supposed to be a simple job. Unbeknownst to Trevor, evil is buzzing nearby. For when he entered the house, so did a bee. While trying to shoo the bee out the back door, he knocks over a small statue, breaking the head off. Looking for glue to repair the statue, he consults the manual on how to open the motion sensor drawers, then absentmindedly sets the book on the stovetop. With the statue, quote, fixed, Trevor begins to prepare lunch. Soup! Unfortunately, he turns on the wrong burner, and the book begins to slowly heat up. In the meantime, the bee, which Trevor thought had flown out the window, begins to antagonize Cupcake. The dog chases the bee into an off-limits room that contains a priceless manuscript. The door has been accidentally propped open, and when the dog barges in, the door shuts. Also, the door has a keypad lock that can only be opened with the year of the Battle of Frischwitzlem. which obviously is 1748.
Obviously.
Trevor, in a panic, can't remember the code, but does remember that it's in the manual. The one that is now caught on fire on the stove. He puts the fire out, but the book is destroyed. As he watches in horror as Cupcake ransacks the room, the bee floats in front of the window, locking eyes with Trevor. Credits. It's exactly what you expect from a non-Mr. Bean project by Rowan Atkinson. It's funny, if a bit predictable. It's only 19 minutes long, and the remaining episodes clock in about 12 minutes each, so it's basically a segmented movie. Now for my predictions. As evidenced by the opening, Trevor is found guilty and goes to jail. Nina and Christian go back to the ruins of their home to salvage what they can. In an ironic twist of fate, Nina is stung by a bee, goes into anaphylactic shock, and dies. Christian becomes the sole recipient of her life insurance and the insurance money from the damage. Later, we see him on a sailing boat with someone who turns out to be Orlando, the missing house sitter. Apparently, Christian and Orlando cooked up this scheme. Knowing how complicated the house was and how untrained Trevor was, it was the perfect storm for a massive payout. All they had to do was get rid of Nina, but her natural death made things easier. As they begin to sail into the sunset, Christian is harpooned through the chest and falls in the water, dead. Who shot him? The bee. Orlando and the bee had been in cahoots the entire time, planning the double cross on Christian. And Nina's death was no accident. The bee who gave its life to take hers was a hired assassin. He knew the risk of the job. As Orlando and the bee start their new life together, we see Trevor in his jail cell. As he's reflecting on how he got there, a fly enters his cell. Bum, bum, bum! I give it 3 awkward Rowan Atkinson spastically trying to put out a fire out of 5.
Okay.
You know, that is stunningly accurate. And I do love how when you say certain words, you just take on the voice of Rowan Atkinson. It amuses me, and it also makes me just feel happy to be alive and a part of this podcast.
It's a bulb.
Yeah. So on to the 4R. There are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are as lost as the plot to Lost. This segment of the show asks you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? It's good then. It'll be good now. Reboot, the idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it, what are these characters doing after a couple decades of growth and development? Or refuse it, Chad, you better recognize. Whoops, I did it again. I found a dumb show. I showed them my friends. Oh, cavers, cavers, whoops. No, really, it's called Whoops. Today, I present it to you and to our listeners as a candidate in the 4R discussion. I tell you This is one of the few shows that I've brought before you guys. I am 100% sure that you have never seen or heard of it outside of a text message that I sent you last night.
You would be correct.
The series is a riff on Gilligan's Island. It ran a whopping 13 episodes. Well, that's how many were produced. 10 of them were aired. And it follows 6 survivors of a world nuclear holocaust. How does it happen? During an all-American parade, a couple of kids who are playing with an RC car on the route, somehow their RC car uses the same codes and frequencies as the nuclear missile that is somehow part of this parade and launch and start a nuclear war.
Whoops.
Our narrator, Mark, he survives because at the time he was doing some banking when he saw a flash, but he is fine because he was in his car, a Volvo. Turns out their reputation for durability was well earned. Other survivors include Jack, a homeless construction worker who is sleeping under the highway. Alice, the late 80s stereotype of a progressive feminist. So guess how that goes down. Frederick, a black research biologist who is surrounded by white folk because diversity. Suzanne, our dumb blonde stereotype who is a brunette. And Curtis, the aggressive, insensitive elitist. They find, by happenstance, a farm that is perfectly green and is all... everything is all there. And this, in this giant nuclear wasteland, there is this oasis. And they decide to restart society. And it turns out about as well as an escape attempt from Gilligan's Island. Stereotypes abound. Cringeworthy jokes also abound. And eventually, there's a Christmas special. And Santa shows up, but he has survivor's guilt because he survived the nuclear apocalypse, but Mrs. Claus and the elves didn't make it to the fallout shelter.
Oh.
No, I'm not kidding. That's episode 9 or 10.
Oh, my.
That's after the giant mutant turkey for Thanksgiving. And after at least once the progressive feminist starts growing very, very large breasts because the plot point of that particular show is, you know, Miss Melons.
Going back to Santa for a minute, may I say on behalf of Darren, oh no!
So I don't know exactly what else I can say about this particular comedy. So what say you? Do you think that maybe we should just give it another chance? Maybe it was ahead of its time and we should review it. Should we reboot it because... let's face it, Gilligan's Island was a hit. We just need to retool this a little bit. Should we revive it? Maybe there's some good out of this. Or should we refuse it?
So, go ahead.
Considering that this aired on Fox.
Yeah, but in like the first 6 years of their life, they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, Fox in 1992. Where really the only good thing to come out of Fox from that era was The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
So Fox has a habit / reputation for canceling shows well before their prime.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely just ruining the runs of good series like Firefly, mm-hmm. You know. It's canceled Family Guy 3 times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I think they got it right with this one. The cancellation part, not the running it in the first place, but the cancellation part they got right. See, I didn't do the assignment. I didn't watch the episode that Chad told me to watch in preparation.
I didn't either.
Full disclosure.
I didn't either.
But just based on what you've told me and based on the Wikipedia entry that I looked at just a few seconds ago, because I'm like, I think I remember this. I don't think I watched it, but I think I remember it. This thing should be damned to hell.
Well, it's been put on YouTube. It's about the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Darren on this one. I think ABC's reboot Lost did it better. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, this is bad. This is the kind of bad that Cop Rock wished it could be. You know, like Cop Rock was really bad too.
It was really bad,
but it was better than this.
Oh yeah.
Like if you're trying to hit rock bottom, there's maybe one show that I've seen worse.
What is it?
We'll get to it sometime.
Oh, God. No, you can't just do that.
Sure I can. It's time for the Trailer Park Roundup. Of course I can do it. It's my segment.
Nothing like a cliffhanger.
She-Hulk looks fine. I'll probably like every part of it that does not include Mark Ruffalo or Talkative Hulk. Because I don't like Smart Hulk. I think Smart Hulk is an awful addition into the MCU.
I would agree.
Samaritan, because Stallone's previous comic book hero, Judge Dredd, wasn't such a good movie. So let's try anew. Halloween Ends. They say it's Jamie Curtis's last run at Michael Myers. Probably because they're going to kill her. You can't possibly let this golden goose go. Black Panther 2. No woman, no cry, morphing into everything's going to be all right. I just about cried. Don't know anything about it. Looks good. You know, looks like an MCU movie.
Yeah.
Looks well shot. Colors are bright. They look like they're going to directly reference Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa, hopefully in respectful ways.
Yeah. I mean, Namor's going to be in it, so you'll get the Submariner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if he's going to be a mutant in this continuity or not. One thing, though, one line that kind of got me a little off guard is that T'Challa's mom saying that, like, my family, my whole family is gone. Suri must be sitting over there like, bitch, what?
Well, maybe she wasn't she making the Ironheart armor?
No, that was Riri Williams, who will be, you know, Ironheart going forward in the MCU.
Okay.
Maybe there's something that happens and we think Suri's dead for a bit. I don't know.
Maybe. Shuri, not Suri. My bad.
I was going to say, Suri is what you ask Apple.
Yes. I've had a long day.
Yep. It's been a long day. I'm all for it, but you sounded great. Black Adam, I like the line they're flirting with hero or villain in the trailers. I know that they want him to be a hero.
Well, and that's true to the character, too.
And Dwayne Johnson really likes being heroic characters and so forth. It will be so cool if they do a heel turn on him and just really make Black Adam into a villain.
Just
for
make
Shazam
him
3.
A bastard, yes.
Don't Worry, Darling. Psychological thriller with Stepford Wives vibes, but a heck of a lot darker. Color me intrigued. I like those psychological ones. John Wick 4. The trailer begins with the line, "Have you given any thought to where this ends?" To which I say, dude, I've asked that question a lot of times lately. Shazam 2. It looks like a lot of fun.
It does.
For everyone except Shazam.
That's the point.
Existential crisis stuff just doesn't seem to fit his character. And so I'm going to trust it because the first one was pretty good.
Yeah, his first one was great.
But, oh, I hope it is not a whole bunch of dour questioning his worthiness for BS.
If they do that, I hope it's tongue planted firmly in cheek, as in Warner Brothers knows that. I mean, they've got to know the biggest criticism about the way they treated Superman, for example.
I can only hope.
They have to know, especially the new guys in charge.
Yeah. D&D, Honor Among Thieves. So, clearly this movie's going to fail, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I love so much about this trailer. I'm probably going to love the movie, and it's definitely going
to
fail.
Oh, we're going to see it, but we'll probably have to reschedule 4 or 5 times before we do.
Because
exactly.
The trailer doesn't even know who they're making the movie for.
No.
I don't know who wanted this movie.
Chris Pine.
Probably. But, I mean, he's in that. He's in the Don't Worry, Darling. You know, He's got a movie coming out.
Yeah.
No, I'm treating this like a video game movie. It's either going to be okay, as in, yeah, my table would have done this more fun. Or it's going to be amazing, and I'm going to be like, well, I don't get to play that. So, they could have called it anything, but they're trying to capitalize on that. That one. Well,
did you see the merch?
Yeah.
The gelatinous God. Cube.
There's so much.
I'm going to buy that so hard.
Also, and the last one I watched, Jeepers Creepers Reborn. So if ever there was a movie that did not need to be made, this is the one. This is the one. I just watched Night of the Lepus with Justin a couple of weeks ago. That movie had more of a right being made than Jeepers Creepers Reborn. Go watch the original Jeepers Creepers. Ignore that there was any sequel and ignore that this exists as well. That's all you need to do. Darren?
All right.
Sir.
For those of you just tuning in, I too am confused.
You have to call them with a very specific whistle. That's not it. That nope. There, what? Close.
Well, Darren Thor and Chad Love and... seem to have a psychotic breakdown, so nope. Welcome to the Justin Show.
No.
Thor, Love, and Thunder, man. The screaming goats.
Yes.
They are coming straight out of the Family Guy playbook for jokes.
Yeah, they are, for all the good and bad.
They are used so often that they stop being funny, and then they start being funny again. It is the Proclaimers Walk 500 Miles cassette tape in Marshall's car from How I Met Your Mother. It just comes around eventually where you're like, okay, fine. It is also the biggest missed opportunity of the movie in that. So, spoilers for the movie.
Yep.
Just be aware.
Spoilers.
Spoilers all over the place. Jane gonna die.
Yeah, if you read the comic, you already knew that, but...
You know? And the very end closing, you know, the closing after all of the credits are finished scene.
Which, you people getting up, why?
What are you doing?
You know by now.
There are 27 flipping movies.
How dare you?
Who do you think you are?
You're just gonna disrespect the key grip like that?
I mean, pick a guy and be like, yo, excellent.
You're going to disrespect Harry Styles at the end of Eternals, the movie that no one saw? Well, yes, actually, but go on.
Now, that being said, Jane gets to go to Valhalla.
And it's a great moment.
It's a very cool moment.
I loved it.
It's a very cool scene. There should have been 3 credit scenes. The one that they did, you know, with the...
With Hercules
and Zeus.
Yeah.
Then toward the very end, you know, you have the one with Jane.
The Valhalla.
And then when everything's done, they've put up the, you know, the studio logos. Thor will return. It should have just been a close-up of the goat's face going,
Yeah, you know, and...
Because that's how often they used it.
Yeah.
They used those damn goats so often in this movie that it would have been the perfect punchline.
And, you know how I feel about Taika Waititi. Specifically...
Mixed.
Yeah, specifically whenever he does superhero movies. I think that he's a great comedic director, but I think that he's merely an okay superhero movie director because... Mm-hmm. Ragnarok especially suffered from a lot of whiplash in that here's this really sad scene and then now laugh, motherfucker. And now here's this really, you know, a serious scene. Ha ha, Bruce Banner landed on his head. And just on and on and on. And he never gave the audience time to breathe. But for whatever reason, people absolutely freaking loved it. And I was in the minority. So he got another shot with this one. And he did a better job, I would say.
This didn't have as much high stakes riding on it.
Yeah.
Thor Ragnarok was coming right before everyone knew that Infinity War and Endgame were coming.
Right.
Things were going to get sour, you know, coming up. And this one, we don't have a direction. Honestly, that's been the theme for all of Phase 4 so far is we don't know where it's gone.
Well, it's the multiverse saga, according to Kevin Feige.
Yeah, that's fine. We don't know where it's going.
Kane.
Yes.
Haven't done a good enough job.
Let me put it this way.
They haven't done a good job.
If you watch Thor, Love, and Thunder,
you wouldn't know.
You don't know that Kang is where we're going.
You're absolutely right.
You know?
Secret Wars.
That's Avengers 6.
Honestly, to me, this plays out a lot like Thor 1, where you didn't know exactly what stakes we were playing for yet.
Right.
You know, where Loki is just the goofy villain who's trying to take Asgard, not the, you know, the second in command big bad of Phase 1.
Right. Christian Bale did a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah.
Super sympathetic villain.
Oh, so I'm going to complain just a second.
Do it.
Because Darren and I were lucky enough to get to go to this movie together. And there was one preview. Like, that's all there was.
Just the one, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was for, like, what was it, Avatar?
Yeah.
Avatar 2, nobody cares.
Avatar 2, Smurfy Cats, even prettier.
Yeah.
Water.
And then you go from water to desert, and I'm like, oh, what's this about?
Yeah.
And you just have the guy walking through, and I'm like, oh, they're doing one of those long-form kind of things where you don't know anything, you're getting this long bit of scene, and then there'll be a title, and then it'll go on.
And then maybe a blah.
Yeah. No. No, no. It just started the movie.
Yeah. It was so
abrupt.
There
was no studio logo. There was no flipping the Marvel pages.
Came like 10 minutes in or something like that. Yeah.
It just started this thing, and it started it with fucking child. Basically dehydrating to death in the desert. And I'm just like,
it's rough.
And I'm like, God damn it, movie. I am not mentally, spiritually prepared for this.
Well, it's okay because then we got the screaming goats.
And then we got the screaming goats and everything was funny.
Yeah. It's Taika Waititi.
Because it's Taika Waititi. Actually, okay. Then we got the god thing. And
yeah, we got the god that ended up like, you know, being a prick and being taken care of by Christian Bale's character, Gore, the God Butcher. And then we got Thor giving a rousing speech and breaking more shit than he saved. And then we got the goats.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was great.
All of it, which is narrated by Rocky Stonerson.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name.
Korg.
Thank you.
It's Taika Waititi.
Yep. Also, Korg has one of the most affective, you know, moments, and then they completely ruin it.
That, yeah. And I'm not sure how many more spoilers we want to say.
I want to get away from that one, but it's like, it's this moment that just hits you.
Yeah, I remember in the theater, I'm like, you son of a bitch. And then a few minutes later, you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So,
that's where that is. Ultimately, I'm glad that I saw it.
Yeah, I think it was good.
When it hits Disney Plus, I'm probably going to watch it again to try to catch some of the things that I missed and to see if I can't sound capture the goats and turn that into one of my ringtones.
I could do that.
Can you?
I've got software.
Cool.
Yeah,
there we go. I think we should do that.
It'll also get the taste of Multiverse of Madness out.
That will be helpful, yes.
Chad did not like it.
Not a fan.
Hi, I'm still here.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things in it, but I said that I did not like it when your heroic characters have consistently low wisdom and intelligence rolls.
That's a fair way to put it.
Yep. Reed Richards making the strategic error of pointing out their strongest weapon immediately is a level of arrogance that
fits Reed Richards. Fits
his personality, but doesn't fit his reputation as the smartest man in the room.
No.
Such and so on. Well, that was the only movie that I really watched. I watched Shang-Chi. It was good. Not great, but really good.
Yeah.
Better than Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
So,
good barometer.
Mm-hmm. So I think that means we're ready for the random...
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, one more thing.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
So, you remember the Matrix code?
Yeah.
You know, the complex-looking green digits that mm-hmm. scroll down the screen?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've cracked it.
Yeah.
It's symbols from a sushi cookbook. That's according to the movie's production designer. They just took a sushi cookbook and, kind of gave it a paper shredder effect and then turned it green. You're welcome. I ruined the Matrix for you.
No wonder I'm always hungry after I watch it.
And then I'm hungry 10 minutes later, too.
Hey-o!
All right. Random movie time. Kent!
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
With a roll of the dice, next month's movie will be Green Snake. Guys, I made a mistake this month. I watched A Walk Among the Tombstones for the random movie, just like I was supposed to. Mm-hmm. In fact, I watched it early. Like, I watched it on the week right after we recorded the last episode. But I didn't write about it until last night. So, a what? Which is A Walk Among the Tombstones, if you just take the letters.
A what? Got it.
Opens with our hero, though we don't know that yet, getting into it with his partner. They're cops. And the partner telling Liam Neeson that he's undependable. It's kind of, we get like a split there in our thinking. Because pretty much right away, like Liam's character, Scudder, orders coffee with shots in it. But then when the place is robbed, he successfully shoots the perpetrators. So it's like, he's a drunk, but he's an effective drunk. Some years later, Scudder's approached by this dude named Peter, who wants some help for his brother. Turns out, Peter's a drug user. He's an addict who's trying to get better. His brother is a drug trafficker, not a dealer. He's very clear about that. Nope, Kenny is a trafficker of drugs. And Kenny's wife has been kidnapped. And though the ransom was paid, the instructions to get her back only led to her dismembered body in the trunk of a car. Because it's that kind of movie.
Was she dating the Green Lantern at a time?
She was not.
Okay, just checking.
And Kenny, the trafficker, does not want, you know, he wants to know who did this so that he can go and kill them. Somehow the story convinces Scudder to take the case. So he goes to the library, does some research. As you should, libraries are amazing places.
Yes,
and he
yes
meets,
they are.
And he meets this streetwise kid named TJ, who helps him out. And in researching similar killings, he reads about Marie Gottesgkind, a DEA agent. And in the course of his investigation and some things that happen, he determines that whoever murdered her somehow managed to get a hold of her files. And so they are now specifically targeting drug dealers and drug traffickers, kidnapping members of their family, holding them for ransom, getting the ransom, but killing the hostage anyway. And eventually, the criminals kidnap a kid, which is easily the hardest part of this movie to watch. And Scudder convinces the criminals that without a live hostage, there's no deal. It is the only bit of light in this entire movie. Unfortunately, the dad, the drug trafficking dealing dad, doesn't have enough real money to make the ransom. So they use some counterfeit money, things go badly, some folks end up dead, but the kid is returned mostly safe and mostly whole to her father. That homeless youth, the streetwise tough from before, stows away in the bad guy's van. They ends up back at the headquarters and calls Scudder with the address. They go, a rousing fight leading to two dead bad guys, a few more dead, not really good guys, but protagonists. The police arrive, they tend to the crime scene while Scudder watches from a distance. And Scudder gets home, and the homeless youth is now not homeless because he's sleeping on the couch. And the movie implies that the two of them are now going to go into the private detective business together. Is the movie good? Yes. Is it worth watching? Maybe? It's one of those in the mood for it kind of movies. Because I doubt there's too many people pulling this from their shelves for a good time. It's not that kind of movie, brah. And really, that's part of the problem. You know, not that it's not a good time, it's just, it's so heavy. The action's not bad, but the commitment to realism makes it a bit anticlimactic. You know, when somebody gets punched in the face, they just get punched in the face. When somebody gets choked by a wire, they just get choked by a wire. There's no theatrics to it. Not that you necessarily need that, but it sometimes lends a little bit of drama to the fight. And there's just not enough drama or stakes in the violence for it to be impactful. So it just comes out as violence for the sake of violence. Scudder's backstory is heartfelt. It's awful. We find out that the reason he quit being a cop is because when he shot those two thieves at the beginning, one of his bullets ricocheted and he killed a kid. So when they get to show that to us, it's a real tough thing to stomach. I'm just not a big fan. Camera works really good. They do a really great job with lighting levels because so much of the movie happens at night. And it happens in alleyways and in dark rooms and gritty detail things. But the details still stand out. And you can follow it. That's good. The story, it's a bit slow, but it's a neo-noir thriller detective story. It's supposed to be slow. It's meant to create anxiety in the person watching, and it did that over and over again, and it did it well. Liam Neeson, he came along. This is a long way from his Peyton Westlake days, all right? And the complexities of his character are the only things that really carry it as a movie. If you watch this, you're watching it for Liam Neeson's character work. That's the truth there. I don't really want to say watch it with friends. It's just too dark tonally to have any fun with it. The well-made dark movies, they require friends that have bought into a night of feeling uncomfortable. But this is also too good to ignore. So I guess by default, it's a be like me, though I didn't expect to say that phrase tonight. So
you didn't dislike it, you misliked it.
Ah, that's a pretty good word for it. It's
all right.
I can appreciate what they were trying to do. The biggest problem with it is that it comes out kind of generic, and so they use shock value in order to try to inject some kind of excitement or intrigue, but it comes out as gratuitous. And if you can't adequately create the tension, grossing me out is not really going to help make your argument. So the acting is really good and the story beats are well thought out. And I like that you don't really like anybody in the movie. They're all flawed in their ways. But you can root for different ones, even the ones that aren't good. So I like a lot of it. But you really got to be deciding when you go into it, you're not going to have a good time. You're going to have a good movie, but it's not going to be a good time movie. If there is no other business, thanks to our sponsor, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly, don't forget to check out geekcavepodcast.com and find that link for Extra Life. Why? Be a big damn hero.
Big damn hero.
Big damn hero.
Find geeky news, etc. also at geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversation. Tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, GoodPod, etc. Don't forget to check out the other offerings. You want me to watch what? Week 3. Head over to Well, now it's on YouTube, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I forgot to mention this during the gaming segment that we were kind of suspending the Twitch live stream for a while until we can figure out just why it doesn't work. So we're doing pre-recorded videos on our YouTube channel, which you can find the link at dkpodcast.com.
All right. And we'll see. Watch Darren play. He just played, as of this recording, he put up Power Washing Simulator.
Power Wash Simulator. Oh, boy.
So it's one that I plan on showing up at his house sometime to play when I've got time and I just need to relax.
That's fair.
I'm going to earn him as many achievements as I possibly can.
You're welcome to do so. Just give me a heads up because I need to reinstall it.
Okay. Well, just reinstall. Just keep it. It can't be that big a game.
It's not. It's like 5D8. It's fine.
See? Fine. And so, for Kent, our cool, some say hip, Marty McFly. For Darren Wright, our Dr. Emmett Brown, the brains of the organization. Justin White, our sexy Jennifer Parker. I'm Chad Savage, your not-so-friendly Mr. Strickland, letting you know that you're all slackers. Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.